First of all, thank you very much to the organizers for accepting this contributed talk. I would ask please to be, Veronica, if you can let me know when I'm at 10 minutes so that I try to leave 5 minutes for the questions.
Okay, this is good.
Okay, so the talk is titled An Experiment to Test the Discreteness of Time. This is the name of the paper here, which is submitted to SciPost. We wrote this with Andrea Di Biagio and Pierre Martin Rousseau. Let me say, by the way, that we want to support this SciPost initiative. It's a very nice open source journal that you can go and contribute a comment or a report. It's completely, I don't remember what's the name of this open peer reviewed procedure. And this paper was a follow-up on a paper we wrote with Carlo. Roughly speaking here, we gave the idea that with the type of technologies and experiments that are being thought about, imagined for detecting gravity-mediated entanglement growth, you might actually probe Planck time, and we'll see why. And this paper is a specific experimental proposal, which is a simpler setup, and there is a detailed feasibility study. So basically what this is three theories that got our hands dirty, and we try to understand what's going on in the experimental literature and did a detailed feasibility study to answer, first of all, for ourselves, where there this thing is something like reaching Planck scale with accelerators, which means making an accelerator the size of the moon, or it's something that actually is feasible. And we are comparing it to the gravity-mediated entanglement growth experiments, where there's many people studying them carefully. And let me go to the first slide. So the main result is that the difficulty of detecting a hypothesized discreteness of time at the Planck level is comparable to this proposals to detect gravity-mediated entanglement growth, which came as a surprise. And I will just give you a couple of hints. Okay, so this slide basically is the main message, because I'm not sure when I might be cut off. The question we're asking is if the proper time of general relativity is not as predicted by general relativity, if proper time is not as predicted by general relativity at the Planck time scale, how difficult is this to detect? So some main points is that it's as difficult according to this feasibility study as detecting gravity-mediated entanglement growth. A negative outcome is also super interesting, because it would confirm that the proper time of general relativity is valid up to that, up to the Planck scale, in particular its continuous behavior. And we don't know what quantum gravity theorists predict here. More imminently, an easier version of the experiment can also be done. Even with current laboratory setups, what do I mean by that? That let's say you do 10 orders of magnitude, you take 10 orders of magnitude from here and there from the experimental parameters to make it easier, then you could actually test continuity of proper time at 10 to the minus 34 seconds, which is 16 orders of magnitude above the precision of atomic clocks. Now, to give you, again, I'm comparing with these other experiments that I will not actually go into, because I'm assuming you have heard about them. The reason this is the case here, why there remains an interest as you go towards your ultimate goal of testing Planck time, is that this is a quantitative measurement. It's not qualitative. It's not that you want to violate some inequality and show that there is entanglement. You really want to plot experimental data and see if you get the exact prediction of general relativity for proper time. Now, the main premise, the main hypothesis, not hypothesis, the main somehow assumption from quantum gravity, if you would call this a quantum gravity assumption, is that somehow the way Feynman was putting it, that the phases we have in quantum evolution are somehow like small invisible intrinsic clocks. So that intrinsic quantum clock is going with proper time. Okay, that's observable we have from general relativity. That's the geometry, the geometrical quantity that is relevant on a word line. The idea is essentially there is a mass that is bigger than the other one, which is our source of gravity. These lines here is not the radar. It's I'm trying to depict that there is some space-time curvature here. It's nothing moving. And there is another smaller mass that is sitting in the field created by the big mass capital M. And the quantum state, whatever this M is, composite system, I'm just putting a ket here, its free evolution is given by proper time times its rest mass energy, because we're not assuming any other sort of physics going on, divided by h bar. Now, this, by the way, gives you the usual result you would get if you would like to do it with a Newton's formula and the gravitational potential energy. Okay, so this is our main premise. Come on. All right, now the experimental setup is very simple. There is the source mass. Here they are flipped. The source mass was left on the previous slide. The source mass is sitting here. This is time, this is space. There is a source mass, and then there is the test mass that is being split in a superposition of paths. This branch here is a distance d, the branches between them are distance l. This is a dynamical phase while they're being split. We are imagining them the way Tsukadobos has in his paper for gravity-mediated entanglement growth, that this happens because there is an embedded spin that is quantum manipulated by any homogeneous magnetic field that splits the superposition, and then you leave it in a static phase for time t. Excuse me. The quantum states will look like this. C is for center, L for left, R for right. Up and down is the z direction, the spins. There are phases, different phases evolving. I see a chat, a message in the chat. There is nothing like closed time like curves here, no. This is time and this is space. This is time going this way. So the phases are evolving. There are different phases on each branch because they feel different gravity. One feels the gravity of M as being at distance L plus D and the other as being at distance D. And there is a part of it which is a global phase. You pick up a phase difference which you can then detect with standard interferometry. And this phase difference is given by the difference in proper time. The difference in proper time is the difference in proper time as measured by the left branch and as experience, sorry, by the right branch times the mass of the thing that we put in superposition, divided by Planck time, divided by Planck mass. Now, if you're familiar with the COW experiment, I never remember the name of the authors, which was done decades ago, it's exactly the same idea, but there the capital M was the Earth, excuse me, and small m was neutrons. Now, this is a point where people sometimes are confused. So here, what we want to do is probe a quantum gravity, possible quantum gravity regime. But instead of having this huge source, which is the Earth, we want actually a tiny source. We'll see that it's gonna be a speck of dust. Essentially, we're gonna have a speck of dust sourcing the gravity experienced by a smaller speck of dust. The reason is that we want to do a very sensitive measurement. So we want a tiny mass, source mass, because we want to measure a tiny time dilation, right? It's this delta tau that we want to measure. And what is this? I'll give you some intuition. There is a mass here. The clock on this branch is going to go a tiny bit slower because it's being, it's feeling the gravity of M. Whenever the gravity is stronger, time goes slower. You cannot detect this by itself, obviously, it's a tiny effect, but if you put another branch there, there is a bit of time dilation here, which is a bit more than what is here because this is further away.
Marius, yes. You are at the 10 minutes mark, just to let you know.
All right, thank you. And so you pick up this tiny difference in time dilation between the branches with interference. Let me go quickly here. So the idea is that you prepare the z-axis superposition, you measure along the y-axis. We will plot an experimental probability distribution, which is the number of hits that you get the plus state in the y-axis divided by the total number of runs. So this is an experimental probability distribution depending on your parameters. And you want to compare this with a theoretical prediction from GR plus quantum mechanics, according to the main premise I said previously, which turns out to be this thing here. Now, if there was a fundamental period of time at the Planck, so if time was going as the multiples of Planck time, then we would have a different distribution. And now the question is, for the feasibility question is, what requirements do you have in order to be able to tell whether you're seeing P plus or PH plus? H is for hypothesis, the hypothesis of discrete time. Main point here is that you need to take into account the uncertainty in the probability, where you see that the closer you are to the Planck mass, the less stringent this requirement is going to be. Anyway, let me go a bit faster. This one more slide after this. So the data would look something like this, that you would get some sort of line where here's a probability distribution, and T over beta is something that has all the experimental parameters in it. Imagine that you're varying one of them. You're measuring the distance D, so you span this axis here. The horizontal axis is how many multiples of Planck time. Here you have 10, so from 0 to 10. If you see this, you cannot really adjudicate whether it's you're seeing P plus or not, unless you have a precision that could resolve this. And that's what we're showing here. In particular, we're doing it here for gravitational noise, that as you start to satisfy the inequalities we have in the paper, there is a very careful analysis in the paper. And if you're interested, you can have a look. I don't have the time to explain how we go through everything, but it's done very carefully. So if you satisfy these inequalities and you still see this, then you can say, yes, it's continuous. But if it's discrete, you're going to see it. So you can tell apart these two theoretical predictions here, the straight line and the one with steps, or any other kind of deviation from the straight line, any other Planckian feature, you would see that. Okay, so this is the result. Let me not go through the values. The point is that we get values for all the parameters with uncertainties, how much control you would be required to have on each of these parameters. A is about the gravitational noise. This is the number of data points, the number of total runs, the total duration, and the range. The gradient of the magnetic field, the pressure, and the temperature. Let me tell you some main points. As I said, before, it's comparable difficulty to gravity-mediated entanglement to go to Planck time precision. Basically, what you have to do to get this, you can see the analysis in the paper, is to make sure you have visibility of the horizontal axis of the, which is a probability. There you have a trade-off between the duration of the experiment and the mass, the visibility of the vertical axis. And there are some main differences in case an experimentalist is following or somebody that has followed gravity-mediated entanglement growth. There are main differences that were uncovered by this. This is a complicated analysis with the inequalities. It took us some time to figure this out. We actually do not need long occurrence times. We want them to be as small as possible. What we're limited there by is magnetic field. So if there is another technique to do it, actually, small coherence times are better. We do not want the superposition to be large. As small as possible is actually better. And again, we're taking values from the literature of things that are feasible. If it could be even less, I mean, you don't have to really split the particle. It is just the center of mass. This would actually be better. And the distance between the source and the test mass, we want it as large as possible. All this is because the task is different. It's not to detect entanglement, is to really have this very sensitive apparatus. The main issue seems to be the pressure, which is similar to what they find in this experiment. It's a very low pressure. This is comparable to the pressure in the intergalactic medium. I know that they're thinking about how to deal with this, but again, any progress that is being made in those directions is going to be applicable to this experiment as well. And that was it. I leave you with a slide with references, some representative references. I'm sorry if I'm missing anybody. This one is not to advertise myself, it's to acknowledge Carlos, also contribution, because essentially this paper I talked about is the follow-up of these two. Then there is the people, I mean, this paper here by Martin Bojoval is actually very interesting because he's arguing that with the current precision of atomic clocks, you can, with certain assumptions of how you quantize time, deduce that we know that time must be continuous up to 10 to the minus 33. This experiment will be a direct measurement of that, wouldn't depend on such assumptions of how you do quantization, although it's a very nice paper. And you could also push that further than the 10 minus 33, up to 10 to the minus 44. There is another 10 orders of magnitude. These are experimental papers where we mainly took our feasibility cues from. And the most important papers, I guess, are these ones that I put in bold. Now, the first one, don't know what it says because I haven't learned German yet, but this is a paper when Einstein suggested we measure the size of an atom by observing the Brownian motion of dust and dust particles. And these are the papers by Millikan. I'm giving you here the code by Wikipedia. This is extraordinary. I'm always surprised by what this is, more than 100 years ago, where he said, well, let's observe oil drops falling in a capacitor that we ionize. And let's see if we can measure the charge. And they not only measured the charge in 0.6% accuracy, they also figured out that it takes integer multiples of a certain base value. So it goes with natural numbers. It's one electron charge, two electron charges, etc. And yeah, one more sentence. And yeah, I just wanted to say that in case what I said seems a bit wild, this has been done before. It's the same logic as here. There is a game with constants, small and big, and there is a statistical game in order to amplify the effect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Marius. There is a question by Philip Hoon. If you could please make it brief.
Yeah, hi, Marius. Thanks for the nice talk. I think
hi, great. Philip.
Guys are looking into this. So I have a question basically from the point of view of quantum gravity, mostly about what sort of degrees of freedom you're kind of testing here with this. And so what the conclusions could be about fundamental discreteness of time or something like this. And that has to do with the fact that you're measuring proper time here in your measure in your experiment, right? So in the proper time, it depends on the metric, and the metric, depending on your point of view, of course, about quantum gravity, would be maybe an effective degree of freedom, not a fundamental degree of freedom that comes through, zooming out of whatever your fundamental maybe discrete structure is, and the zooming out is maybe given by some coarse graining or renormalization, but then you would probably be testing sort of effective quantum gravity degrees of freedom, no? Rather than maybe exactly the Planck scale. So in that sense, I mean, it's still, that might be an interesting experiment to do, but wouldn't it rather test effective degrees of freedom rather than fundamental degrees of freedom?
I mean, the point is that you're posing a question, right? You don't know and I don't know. So we need experiments to guide us. I don't know what is predicted by quantum gravity, by quantum gravity or any other theory for this regime. And I think that is worrisome. It's not a complicated thing. And we don't know what's the prediction, right? From quantum gravity. So I'm not taking a stance there. I think it's super high risk to say that quantum gravity predicts something out of the ordinary there. I don't have any strong argument. The point is that to probe the proper time of generativity. Basically that's it. and then we see what we get. If we get that there is a...
I agree. I mean, you could also even, you know, test, whether maybe space-time is even classical all the way down to whatever fundamental scales, so whether it deviates from general relativity. I agree. I mean, it was more trying to get your perspective on what sort of quantum gravity scenario you would be testing in this. But okay, you seem to be quite agnostic, so that's fine. Good.
Yes, I'm agnostic about it. I'm trying to see if there is, but I don't have anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's important to note, though, that the fact that we don't know what loop quantum gravity or other theories say about this very simple case, it's basically what Abhay was saying yesterday, that this low energy regime, we don't really have it under control, right?
No, sure. Although from the point of view of loop quantum gravity, I would probably rather expect that there should be some renormalization towards proper times that becomes relevant. But that's just an expectation, of course, because we have a huge scale gap in between. We don't know. But of course, we can take some inspiration from particle physics, where renormalization plays a big role.